You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The U.S.-led invasion of Iraq and the long and bloody insurgency that followed have left many parts of the country broken. Iraq's oil and gas industry, arguably the most important part of the country's economy, still has a number of problems. Joining us now is Pulitzer Prize winner Daniel Yergin, an international energy expert and the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Quest, Energy, Security, and the Remaking of the Modern World, which is published by Penguin Books. I'm very pleased to welcome Daniel Yergin back to our show. Hello.
Hello. Glad to be with you again. Thank you.
All this week, a number of commentators have claimed that the Iraq War was primarily, or at least in large part, about securing the country's oil reserves for the United States. What do you think?
I don't think that was the prime objective. I think there are a lot of other objectives. I think it was one of the issues, sort of accentuated by the fact of 9/11 and at the point the breach with Saudi Arabia as a result of that, where Saudi Arabia, some Saudi officials were denying who had done 9/11 until May of 2003. There was seen it as an alternative to Saudi Arabia in the Middle East, but if you look at actually what happened, if it was a prime objective, that wasn't achieved in any event.
Well, wouldn't the Bush administration?
And it's unclear what a prime objective would have been, because the Iraqis, nationalistic people, they have about the toughest terms of any country in terms of allowing international companies to operate there.
It seems that pretty much all of our prime objectives have not been met. But wouldn't the Bush administration and the Pentagon have planned what to do with the Iraqi oil industry in a post-war environment as a high priority?
Well, it's interesting. That was not the case. It was not secured. It was not protected. It was looted. And there was not a very clear plan at all for its organization. I went back and interviewed for The Quest the people who were actually there on the ground, and they were kind of improvising. As a guy who was sort of sent over to coordinate it said the industry was in dilapidated and deplorable condition, and that security became an enormous problem, and production went down and was often interrupted. So the organization and the planning for oil, as for the rest of the economy, was not done in a thorough way.
But even before the war in January 2003, didn't the Wall Street Journal report on meetings between Dick Cheney's staff and the heads of major U.S. oil firms to discuss what to do with the Iraqi industry?
Well, I have a quote in the book from the CEO of one of the major oil companies who said, when people come and ask me to invest there, I'm not going to invest until I know what contracts are, what the rule of law is, what arbitration is, what security is. And so there were discussions, but not much happened at all until 2009, when the very first contracts were let.
Has Iraqi oil production increased much over the last 10 years?
Well, it took to get until 2009 to get back to the levels of 2001. Now it is increasing, and in fact, Iraq has now exceeded Iran as the second largest producer in OPEC after Saudi Arabia. But it's enormous problems, and if you talked, as I did recently, to some of the people operating there, they say their most expensive cost is security.
Because it has been a target of all the groups that are opposing the situation in Iraq right now?
Yeah, it's a target for all sorts of, terrorists and insurgents, and security costs are enormous. So there are a number of companies that are operating there now. The general message is that it's pretty darn difficult to operate, partly because of security, partly because logistics are so difficult, and partly the bureaucracy is so challenging.
Well, you mentioned a number of companies are operating there. Is the Iraqi oil sector largely privatized now? What about before the war?
No. Well, before the war, of course, it was all run by the state company. And the government is still controls the industry's partners, and the companies come in basically as contractors to it to provide skills. The Iraqi industry was cut off for years and years from the global industry, and so it's way behind in technology and everything. So they have a whole range of companies that are operating there from around the world. I think most of them are finding they're not actually making money.
You say around the world, so it isn't just the United States?
No. The U.S. companies have a relatively small role. That goes back to your question about was this a grand plan to somehow make it a U.S. oil province? You know, the leading companies, the Chinese companies are at the forefront, Sinopec, China National Petroleum Company, BP, Shell, Petronas from Malaysia is there, Lukoil from Russia is there, Eni from Italy. So it's quite a range of companies. There's a further complexity that, of course, the problems in the oil industry reflect the ethnic tensions and conflicts in the country. So the oil is concentrated in the south, in the Shia region, and it's concentrated in a kind of new province in the semi-autonomous Kurdistan in the north. And there is a constant battle between the Kurds and Baghdad over Kurdish development and whether if companies go to Kurdistan, they're sort of blacklisted from operating in Iraq.
Now, two reporters for the Financial Times wrote this week that when it comes to the oil industry and Iraq, quote, the Americans won the war, the Iranians won the peace, and the Turks won the contracts. So have most of the contracts for oil development gone? You mentioned the oil companies,
but in this case,
these are the people who are rebuilding the oil industry?
Well, and they're in rebuilding in general hotels, you know, offices, housing, infrastructure. You have these large Turkish engineering companies who have they go into difficult areas, and of course it's next door, so they've been very active. But I think that article also noted that 70% of the Turkish business is in Kurdistan, and that in fact Baghdad and Ankara are at odds, because just to, you know, the next stage in geopolitical complexity is that Saddam Hussein did not allow oil development in the Kurdish region because he didn't want to enrich the Kurds. And so there's a man named Dr. Ashti, who's the Kurdish oil minister. And so when they were negotiating in Baghdad in 2005, 2006, he said, oh, if you don't want those hills, I'll take them. So now people think Kurdistan is also quite prospective, but it's more, as one oil man said, it's like Texas in the 1920s. But the problem is the oil is bottled up. It needs pipelines. The Turks would like to build the pipelines because it's right next door. Baghdad is kind of on the warpath against Turkey about doing this. So the regional tensions are still a very important part of the overall oil development.
And should we be surprised that the Kurds are working with the Turks, considering the fact that there has been a Kurdish insurgency within Turkey?
I think you're right. I think we should be somewhat surprised. But the for the Kurds in Iraq, Turkey is the great balancer to Baghdad, given all the conflicts and tensions. And we see, at least in Turkey now, some efforts at negotiation between the Turkish government and the militants, the Kurdish militants, the Turkish-Kurdish militants. And people do suspect that this is connected to trying to settle that problem down so that Turkey can continue to expand its economic relationships with the Iraqi Kurds.
I'm talking with Pulitzer Prize winner Daniel Yergin, whose last book was a New York Times bestseller, The Quest, Energy, Security, and the Remaking of the Modern World. So do you ever imagine a time when the country's many ethnic and religious factions will be able to agree on an equitable distribution of Iraqi oil profits?
Oh, I think that's going to be a constant struggle because, you know, so much money is at stake. And it is so much tied up with what is the nature of the Iraqi nation and how is political power distributed. You know, the article you cited before, you know, the Iranians have seem to have enormous influence in Baghdad, in this government. And so I think these are very deep-seated conflicts, and there's, you know, a lot of money to fight about.
Now, has the average Iraqi seen any benefits from the expanded oil production? Because NBC News reports that Iraqis get by on an average of just 7.6 hours of electricity a day. Now, we're talking about one of the world's richest oil countries. You say second after Saudi Arabia.
I mean, it is, People think, in fact, that the prospects, of Iraq are enormous. And this is, the consequence of dictatorship and then this war, that the problems of electricity, the very basic things you would think of availability of energy that you would think would be kind of no-brainers because of the country, they don't have it because of the disruption and the lack of investment and the continuing conflict in the country.
Also, the bombing of the infrastructure during the first Gulf War.
Yes. Well, the first Gulf War and then the continuing destruction in the quest. I have some stories about things like, garbage treatment plants and power plants that were looted or bombed, rebuilt, looted, and bombed again, and it was just a recurrent thing. Well, I mean, one of the other things that the planning for the war did not anticipate was the scale of looting, of just stealing copper wires and everything else and taking them to Iran and Kuwait and selling them. So the country lost a great deal. And in terms of your question, has the money flowed to the people and improved the standard of living? Well, they'd be worse without the oil money, certainly, but it, the lives of Iraqi people are very harsh in economic conditions and, of course, in terms of security.
Well, I've read that many foreign firms in Iraq use imported labor for much of their workforce. Why wouldn't they hire local Iraqis?
Well, it's a very interesting thing. Even now, there's pressure because of security. The international companies from around the world bring in international security firms. There's now pressure to say hire Iraqi security firms. But are the, then the question is, are the Iraqi, do you feel confident relying on the Iraqi security firms given, all the uncertainty in the country? So the other thing about the, the oil and energy industry in general, it's not by itself a huge employer. The jobs come out of it because of the money that would flow into the economy and getting the economy going again. And that is still not happening for all the kind of disruption reasons.
Well, Paul Wolfowitz declared in 2003 that the reconstruction of Iraq would be paid by oil exports. Why hasn't that proven to be true?
Well, in one way, first of all, the numbers that were thrown around for Iraqi oil production, how much it was increased, were based upon a world in which everything went just perfectly. And that didn't happen, of course, by any means. And production went down. Sometimes Iraqi oil was virtually not flowing at all during the middle years of the last decade. The one thing that was not anticipated in 2003, when oil was $20 a barrel, that it would be $100 a barrel today. And so, in a sense, the oil earnings are more, but the volumes are less. But it, has not paid by any means for rebuilding and reconstructing the country. There are all those notions that this was going to be like post-war Germany, or there's going to be like a Marshall Plan, and that the economy was all going to, free market principles were going to be embraced. And I think that if you look back, there was very little, if any, discussion about that there would be an out-and-out warfare between elements of the Shia and the Sunni population. And yet that is what has been the reality.
Well, partly because, as we have learned, many people in the White House had no idea that there was a difference between Shiites and Sunnis.
Yes, that is, it was just kind of thought that people were waiting for that it was going to be like the liberation of France. I mean, one actually heard statements comparing it to that, and that it would be like the occupations that we had in Germany. We had denazification in Germany after World War II, and they used the term debathification. It turned out to be very different.
Daniel Yergin, getting back to the claims that the Iraq war was fought over oil, in 2007, both former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan and then-Senator, now Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, said that the Iraq War was largely about oil. Speaking about this to law students at Catholic University, Hagel said, they talk about America's national interest in Iraq. What the hell do they think they're talking about? We're not there for figs. If, as you argue, oil wasn't the main reason we went into Iraq, what do you think it was?
Well, I think to go back to that, when you say it was about oil, I mean, I don't know what people imagine that somehow the U.S. government or U.S. companies would have taken over the Iraqi oil industry. I've always thought that the first Gulf War was more directly about oil because it was about the threats to Kuwait and then the threats to the Saudi oil fields. And that had been, protecting those resources had been a point of U.S. foreign policy going back to Harry Truman, actually. This one, I think historians are going to actually still struggle for a long time to try and look at all of the different reasons that were there. I think the Persian Gulf, the orientation of the Persian Gulf, was part of it. I think 9/11 had a lot to do with it. I think settling the unfinished business of 1991 was part of it. So I think there are a lot of different things that came together in a rather unexamined way with very optimistic assumptions about what would happen and how quickly it would happen, and confusing, a lightning war with what turned out to be a very long occupation.
Now, oil prices are up in this country. Where is the oil from Iraq going?
Well, it goes into the world market. More and more oil from the Persian Gulf in general is going to Asia. We get some oil from the Persian Gulf, and I think we do get a little bit of Iraqi oil in this country. The other thing that Iraqi oil is going to, the increase, combined with the increased production in the United States, which has been, U.S. oil production is up 40% since 2008, huge number, is replacing the Iranian oil that is sanctioned. And about half of Iran's oil exports are now not getting to the market. And that's one of the reasons that that Iraq is now supplanted. Iran is the number two producer in OPEC.
Daniel Yergin won the Pulitzer Prize for his book, The Prize. And he then wrote a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, called The Quest, Energy Security and the Remaking of the Modern World. It's been issued recently by Penguin in a revised and updated edition. I thank you so much for being on our show today.
Well, thank you.